We got Parshas Shlach. We're going to be dealing with the pasuk. It says Parak Yud Gimel Pasuk Tazayin. Elis Moshe. I don't know this much. I should show up Moshe with the Eretz. These are the names of the men that Moshe Rabbeinu sent out to spy out the land. But you call Moshe Hoshea ben Nun Yehoshua. Moshe called out to Hoshea ben Nun. He called him Yehoshua. Added on the Yud to his name. So the first thing we have to know, this is a very, very important point. The Rashbam and the Rabbeinu B'chayev point this out. This is not the first time we've ever seen Yehoshua. It's not like Yehoshua was just named right now. We're like, oh, wow, this is so great. His name was changed to Yehoshua. Yehoshua has been mentioned three times until now. Three times he's been mentioned. All three times he's known as Yehoshua, not Hoshea. He's known as Yehoshua. He's called Yehoshua in Bishalach when he fights against Amalek. He goes up against Amalek and Moshe Rabbeinu calls Yehoshua to go fight against Amalek. Not Hoshea, Yehoshua. In Kisisa, when he seems he's at the foot of the mountain with Moshe Rabbeinu, and he tells Moshe Rabbeinu, okay, we're going to go this way, but let's go find the people, and I hear this noise that's coming out there. He calls him Yehoshua. It's Yehoshua, not Hoshea. And in last week's parsha, when he hears the nevuah of Elbed and Medad, he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Yehoshua says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Kla'in, destroy them. It's so strange. At the end of Hazinu, which is later on, he's known as Hoshea. But over here, he's always been known as Yehoshua. It seems so strange that he's being called this. So the Rashbam and the Rabbeinu B'chayev both say it may be that the name was changed at some other point, but it seems to be telling us that those psukim over there are telling us what's going to be in the future, what is now. In the end, his name is going to be Yehoshua. At the time, he really was Hoshea, but because, I mean, just consider it this way. The Torah is being written at the end of 39 years based on what happened beforehand. Because of that, it's being written and it's saying Yehoshua, who later on is really Yehoshua. Right now he's Hoshea, but later on is Yehoshua. He's the one that's doing that. That's not the Rashbam and the Rabbeinu B'chayev put it. What's up?
It's like there were times in Sefer Bereishis where it says that the Avos traveled to certain places and actually they said like it wasn't called this yet.
Very, very good. And even in this week's parsha, Nachal Eshkol was called Nachal Eshkol. Taking the Gra aside, Nachal Eshkol is called Nachal Eshkol. That's clear. They came to Nachal Eshkol and they called it Nachal Eshkol.
Whoa.
Right? The Gra says the different name, but regardless, that's what it is. The Chizkuni and the Paneach Raza says no. His name was always Yehoshua, we're just mentioning it now. He was known as Yehoshua when he first became Moshe Rabbeinu's servant. When he started serving Moshe Rabbeinu, that's what happened over there. Then it too seems to say that they forgot his name. And they all thought that it was Hoshea again, but it really was Yehoshua. And now they wanted to publicly tell everybody, listen, his name was changed, that's that. Now, I've got a Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says it's definitely true, but there was something wrong here. Everybody came in front of him with no order. Men, children, all these older men. The kids are jumping in front of the older men. The older men are like being pushed out of the way. There was a chisaron in kavod haTorah that Moshe Rabbeinu was seeing among the people, and he was upset. It seems like they were going crazy. Now, really, they were lacking in emunah and bitachon. Why were they lacking in emunah and bitachon? Because they didn't believe that God was actually going to give them the land. So they came in a crazy order, saying, "We got to do the meraglim. We have no choice but to do the meraglim." And in that, they thought it was sakanas nefashos. When it's sakanas nefashos, you don't let anybody go in front of you. They all ran in front and they went up in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu knew something was wrong, but he also knew that they had a good idea. I mean, seemingly, natural spies is the way to go. They're going into a land where they're going to have to work naturally. No longer is there going to be the mun and the air and the anani akavo. That's not going to be anymore. Seemingly, you need this. You do need this. This is something that we absolutely need. So we asked for God's input. How do you ask for God's input? Well, I don't know why they did this. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said they went to the Urim and Tumim instead of going to God directly and just Moshe Rabbeinu saying, "Hey, Hashem, what's going on?" But they went to the Urim and Tumim. The Urim and Tumim said, "Send out the spies." And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky points this out. You got to be careful when you call the Urim and Tumim and you ask the Urim and Tumim a question. You ask the Urim and Tumim a question. You could do it the right way. You could do it the wrong way. Everybody remember Pilagish Begiva at the end of Shoftim?
Yeah, you all do, right? You all remember it from your seminary days.
So I'm just saying, at the end of Shoftim, Pilagish Begiva. That's not bad. Binyamin is true. Pilagish Begiva. They went to the Urim and Tumim and they said, "Who should go up first?" That's what they said. Who should go up first? That was the wrong question. What should they have asked? Not who should go up first, but
should we go up?
The answer is yes or no. But they said, "Who should go up first?" And Yehuda Yahweh is what it says. Yehuda should go up first. And they were going to be the ones that were going to go up first. They asked it wrong. So Tov Eir, they asked, "Who should go up for us to the Meraglim? Who should be the Meraglim?" And Hashem gave them a list.
Why Yehuda?
Not in this case. Over there, why Yehuda? I mean, the answer is, who should go up first? Yehuda. But you're not asking me if you're going to win. If you're going to ask me if you're going to win, I'm going to tell you, no, you're going to lose. That's what I'm going to tell you right now. When they asked, they said, who should be the Meraglim? Who should be the spies? To that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered and gave them the list that's mentioned in our Parsha. Listen to this of Yaakov Kamenetsky. His name was always Yoshua. His name was switched already. His name was Yoshua. We always know him as Yoshua. It was switched when he first became the servant of Moshe Rabbeinu. But when Moshe Rabbeinu got the Nevuah from the Urim Mitumim, and he was told the names of who was going to go from every Shevet, the name from Ephraim was Hoshea ben Nun. The Urim Mitumim did it. And at that moment, Moshe Rabbeinu said, uh-oh, something's wrong. Why would the Urim Mitumim call him Hoshea ben Nun? Why would he do it such a way? There's something wrong here. They did go Al Pi Hashem. They asked the Kodesh Baruch what to do, but they asked him the wrong way. Something's wrong over it, and that's what Moshe Rabbeinu davened for him and brought back the Yud. Now, the Chassam Sofer really says something crazy. He was born with the Yud, similar to what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says. He was really born Yoshua, not that it changed by Moshe Rabbeinu. He was born with the Yud, but he lost it. When did Yoshua lose his Yud? He lost it in last week's parsha when he called Moshe Rabbeinu by his first name. Now, I know the halacha is you are allowed to call your Rebbe by their first name as long as you give them some type of an accolade beforehand. Meaning, yeah, Adoni Moshe would be a perfect example. We even say Moshe Rabbeinu. Nobody has any qualms about saying stuff like that, right? I'm okay. You know, I'm not going to kill you if you say Ritzvi. I'm fine with that, I guess, at the end of the day, if you had on a shlitzer or something, right? But I'm just saying that's usually perfectly fine. But Yoshua should not have used Moshe Rabbeinu's name. Let me tell you something crazy. Rav Victor Miller says this. It's also from the Sefer HaChassidim and the Hatgama. You've got to be very careful with this. You will never find a name of Avram, Yitzchak, or Yaakov that is mentioned ever until the times of the end of the Tanoim. For almost 1,400 years, not once do you see that name, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. You know why? Such a simple reason why. The reason why is because those names were so sacrosanct. They were so holy. Nobody could imagine that they would call their kid that. You can't call him that. You know why the Baba Sali's name was Yisrael? Rabbi Yisrael Abuchatzera? Because they were naming him after the Avir Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov Abuchatzera, the Baba Sali's grandfather. But the Baba Sali couldn't, the Rabbeinu Masud's father. So Rabbeinu Masud, the Baba Sali's father, couldn't imagine his son being named by his father's name. He couldn't imagine it. So he called him Yisrael, which is the other name for Yaakov, instead of Yaakov. So really, the Baba Sali's name should be Rabbi Yaakov Abuchatzera. But he couldn't call him that. Certain names you just can't call. At some point that ended. But you'll see, throughout Tanakh and Shas, there's no other Avram. It doesn't exist. There's one man named Avram Choza in Gittin Daf Nun, and that's that. Moshe Bar Atzri is an Alma Oretz at the end of Bava Basra. He's an Alma Oretz. He's the only Moshe in all Shas, Midrashim, Yerushalmi. I didn't go through all of it, okay? But somebody else did and said that, right? I'm taking his word for it. I'm just waiting to finish everything. When I do, I'll tell you. But Moshe Bar Atzri is the only one. I'll give you one. One in this case is you have Gadi ben Yosef in this week's parsha. You have Yosef that's mentioned again. But Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov, there were two holy, two great, and Moshe's name as well was too holy, too great. There are certain names that were like that in that way until the middle of the Tanoim, something like that happened. For that, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, I'm sorry? No, there's no question. There were certain names that were like that. No, there's no question regarding that at all. I'm just saying there were certain names that had that holiness that they would not do. Those were the Avos and Moshe. Those names, so to speak, couldn't be used. The Chassam Sofer says when Yoshua said Moshe by his name, even though he said Adoni Moshe, he said it as Reb Moshe. He said it that way. That name you could not say. And at that point, Adoni, my Rebbe. That's how he should have referred to him. In some way, shape, or form, that's how he should have done. Moshe Rabbeinu Davin, because Moshe Rabbeinu is the biggest don of. He said, bring the Yud back. I don't care that he called me by my first name. I don't care. He said, bring it back. Moshe was worried that because this Yoshua was such a special person, he needed to go ahead, he needed to bring it back. Moshe Rabbeinu said he needs it to fight the Meraglim, he needs that Yud, and he brought the Yud back from Sarai. Sarai lost her yud, and that yud was given over to Moshe, to Yoshua. That's the yud that eventually became Sarah. That yud was given over. That caveat was, once something like this happens, you lose a little bit more Kedusha. Something's gone. Yoshua was not able to be molid bonim zcharim. Wasn't able to have baby boys from that point on because he took on that yud of Sarah. More on that later, but that's the idea that Chassam Sofer says. His name always was Yoshua. He lost the yud, and now he's bringing it back. Moshe Rabbeinu davened to bring it back. That's a good question. That I don't know. I don't know, because normally you'd see Binyamin, he's quoted as double yuds, but that I don't know. I don't have an answer to that question. Yeah, it's only one throughout. You're missing it between the mem and the nun. That I don't know. I'll tell you in another sefer, the Chassam Sofer says another answer, that Hosea is the more special name, not Yoshua. Hosea is the more special name, and really it's the opposite. He gave him a yud to show him, don't worry, you still are special even with the yud. It's so to speak, Hosea is the biggest one. He brought the yud back to allow him to be like less of an onuf, so he wouldn't give in to the meragrim. You should know like this. And then, well, hold on a second. If Hosea is the greater name, why is Sefer Yoshua known as Yoshua? It should be known as Hosea. Sefer Hosea. So why is it called it that way?
Someone else already.
Who wrote it? Who wrote it? No, who wrote Sefer Yoshua?
We already have a Hosea later.
No, but who said it? Nah, don't give me. That's not it. No, that's not it. Sinu, who wrote it? Yoshua wrote it. Yoshua wrote his name in the lesser respect because he didn't want to call himself Hosea, which was the more special name. He called himself Yoshua, says the Chassam Sofer, the less special name. It's crazy, Chassam Sofer. Either way, regardless, we do know that Hosea is an honorable name, as there was a nubby named Hosea, which you guys are so set upon. There was another one right over there. Not yet. Not yet, Hosea. Later. Rav Avigdor Miller says that the pshat is he wanted to add on to Yoshua's name in contrast to the other Meraglim. If you look throughout the Meraglim's names, this is a really cool idea. Look at the other Meraglim's names, says Rav Avigdor Miller. Each one of them is missing something. For example, Gadi is a shortened version of Gadiel. That's clear. But he's known as Gadi. Why? Because he spoke Lashon Hara. Throughout, you can see Nachbi is Nachbiel. Vafsi is Vafsiel. Now, although there is still Gamliel, then there are some that do have the name El inside there. For the most part, the Meraglim lost the shame El or the name of Yudke from their names because they did something wrong. Yoshua got the Yud because he knew he was going to do something right. That's exactly what happened over here, that each one of them had lost something. Kalev himself also almost lost it, not for the fact that he went to Marasaf Pela and got himself back. He should also be, it's not Kalev, it should be Kalev Yo or something like that. The name should be a little bit more, but he wasn't. There was something that was added on specifically for him. It's a crazy idea, Sir Victor Miller. Look by every other name, you'll see something's missing. Look by Yoshua, something is added. That's the contrast that Sir Victor Miller says over here. That's the idea that he says. Now, let's go on to something else. Rashi says the purpose of the name change was that Moshe Rabbeinu would daven for him. Yo Yoshiech Me'atzas Meraglim. May God help you from the eights of the Meraglim and save you from that. Since the Chachamim is medayik this from the word Vayikra. Vayikra means he's calling out to him the same way that Avram davened. Vayikra Shom Avram B'Shem Hashem. That he davened there. Vayikra is to daven. So it's where he davened for Yoshua. This Sforno says his feel is that he would be saved from any situation that he would come up upon. Yoshua means he will be saved. If the giants try to kill him, Yoshua will be saved. That was the idea, says the Sforno, of what happened over here. But the Or HaChaim asked something so simple. Why do you need to change his name? Just daven. You don't need to change his name. Just daven for him. And the answer is, he says, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, that he's getting the koach to fight against the Yud Shvatim. That's the koach that he was given. The name change was to show him what he was going up against. You're going up against 10 of them. So he davened for him and then gave him the Yud to let him know what he was going up against. You're going to get up against. Or maybe that you'll get the schar of all 10 if you convince them to be on your side. That's the one part that we're not, that we're missing over here. Yoshua may have worked the entire time trying to convince the Meraglim that everything was good. It could be, we have absolutely no idea. It didn't work in the end, but that was the idea behind it. Rashi and Divrei Yomim says the idea that we mentioned before in Divrei Yomim Beis Lamed Bav Dalet says that Choshev a people, when they bring in a servant, they call the servant by a new name to show them that they're his servant. It's kind of like an evil thing to do. You know, you call somebody in, and you're like, what's your name? John? Okay, now you're Max. Okay, you're just Max. From now on, I'm calling you that. What?
Like the Marines.
Like the Marines? Is that what they do in the Marines?
No, but I heard that they...
Oh, they make you look different, so to speak, almost what they do with the Levian. Yeah, I could ask that guy.
Who's that guy? Kiva, right?
Yeah, we could ask him. Rav Hirsch says the reason he changed his name, because he wanted the people to call him by this new name, and they would say, Yehoshua. Or somebody would call out and be like, hey, Hosea. And they'd be like, no, his name was changed to Yehoshua. And every time they would say he changed his name, they'd be like, why did they do that again? Oh, that's right. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was davening that we are successful. They would think that way the whole time. What's up there?
The ultimate sign of ownership or disrespect. Like, I own you. I own your name.
That's the idea behind it. No, for sure. That's the shot behind Rashi. That's the idea behind it. Now, Rashi also mentions, this is based on Yerushalmi Sanhedrin, Perek Beis Halacha Vav, in the Yerushalmi, that back in Bereishis, Yud Zayin Hey, now we said this a little bit before from the Chassam Sofer, the Yud in Sarai's name went up to Shemayim and complained. He said, the Yud said, I don't know if it's he or she, the Yud said, why am I taking off the name? You got to give me to somebody else. I want to go somewhere else. And Hashem said, don't worry, I'm going to move you from the end of a name, Sarai, to the beginning of a name, to Yehoshua. And the Yud was prepared for this moment to be added on to Yehoshua. Now, here's the idea behind it. Let's go through a couple things over here. In Sota Daf Lamed Hey, it says that Kalev silenced the people. By Yahas Kalev, he shushed them all. It's an onomatopoeia. That's a great word. And I used it 3 times this week because I love the word. It's an onomatopoeia, which means it sounds like what it actually means. By Yahas is shh, like that. Okay? So by Yahas Kalev, he silenced them. And he got them like that. And he told them everything should be quiet. But Yehoshua couldn't. Why couldn't Yehoshua do it? Reish Ketia Yimalel. They called it Reish Ketia Yimalel. What does Reish Ketia MLL means? The guy whose head is going to be cut off, why should he speak? Okay, so we have to understand, what does that mean? So the Aruch says they all made fun of him. Reason why, since the first letter of his name was a cut off letter, a Yud. Strange chop from the Aruch, right? You got a small Yud. Do you make fun of Yehuda for that reason? Yisachar? You make fun of Yisachar? But that's the Aruch's shot. The Rashi says, because he didn't have any children, and he had nothing to lose if they went into Eretz Yisrael and lost the war. He was single. He didn't have any children, right? He didn't have, eventually, Rachel's not here yet, right? Rachel's not for another 39 years. So either way, that's the shot behind it. Now, the problem with Rashi is that he's only 42. I mean, he has years to be able to have a child. You'd think that that's going to be over there. The problem with the Aruch is, who cares that his first letter is a small letter? What's the big deal? Says in Itzutei Shimshon Rishimshon Astropolia, the Yud that was taken from Sarai was not given to any other tzaddikim. And the reason why it wasn't given to other tzaddikim is because they knew that Yud stood for a person who can't give birth to boys. Give birth to girls, but not to boys. So that Yud was not given over to anybody else. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to give it. Nobody wanted to give the Yud. Because that Yud stood for, you're not going to have any boys. As a side note, by the way, I always wondered. We all know that Avraham Avinu had a daughter, right? Bakol. That's from the Gemara in Bavasra, right? And Kuklav Aleph, and right over there in Tezayin. Regardless, there's Bakol that's mentioned. Hashem Barach Zavim Bakol, and they Darshan Bas Hayolo. That's from Rav Meir, and that's from the Acherim, etc. Bakol was the name of the daughter. So the question is, where did he have it from? So the Chassam Sofer takes it as a given that it's from Hagar, that it was Hagar's daughter, and there's a Tosos in Bava Basra, Kuklav Aleph, that seems to say that, and the Shoel, and the Shilas Chuvis Rashba, Chelik Dalid Simen Mem, seems to say that as well, that it's referring to the daughter from Yishmael, from Hagar, and that she was the sister of Yishmael. Nonetheless, it could be, it's the only thing. We know that Avram and Sarah were not able to have any kids, right? Maybe, if we're saying right now, the Yud meant you couldn't have any boys, maybe it meant they did have girls, but they didn't have any boys. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that. I'm saying maybe they did have girls, but they didn't have any boys, right? And that's what it meant by Reish Kiti Yimalel, you're not having it. Maybe Avraham Avinu did have a child. I know it's going against everything, but according to the way they're learning it right now, the Yud means you can't have boys, but you could have girls. So why wouldn't Sarai be the same way? Maybe the child was from Sarai. Well, I'm sorry?
Well, if she didn't have a woman.
Again, it's going against that measure in Samach Dalad of Yavamas, that she didn't have it. She was an island, she was a Tumtai, whatever it was. Nonetheless, it's an unbelievable idea. It's something to even think about. Maybe that's the idea. Regardless, what Sipcha says in the Tzitzit Shemshon, the Yud had something to do with the fact that Sarai was not able to have those boys. Yehoshua was only given this Yud because Moshe knew that Yehoshua was never going to be Moled Banim. Somehow Moshe Rabbeinu knew that Yehoshua was not going to be Zocha to have children, and therefore gave him the Yud. So therefore it goes together. the Yud, which means that you're not going to have children, was given to Yeshua because Moshe Rabbeinu must have known that Yeshua wasn't going to have those children, those boys. And therefore, how could he lead us out to war if he's never going to have those boys? It's a crazy idea because obviously there's still tefillah, there's still ways of doing tshuva, etc. Nonetheless, that's the reason, says in the Egyptian, why he ended up giving it to you. There's another idea. Crazy. From the Be'er Basodeh in Parshas Vayechi. In Parshas Vayechi, Yaakov Yehuda davens and says, Besodom al tavo nafshi. In their secrets, don't let my soul come. I don't want to be around them. And that's referring to the Meraglim. Do not allow myself, says Yaakov Avinu, to be involved with the Meraglim. I don't want to have anything to do with the Meraglim. So here's the pshat. I'm sorry? Yeah. Besodom al tavo nafshi. He said in the brachos.
What do they have to do with Meraglim?
So here we go. You ready? Besodom al tavo nafshi. He didn't want it. What's up, guys? I'm sorry? The other one, right? Besodom al tavo nafshi. Does anybody know the psukim? Besodom al tavo nafshi. Something. There's another line, and that's referring to Korach. But Besodom al tavo nafshi is referring to the Meraglim. In order to influence the Meraglim to make the right decision, this is what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Moshe convinced the Shvatim to come down and be misgalgil their neshamos into each one of the Shvatim. When the psukim go on and say, Lamate Yehuda, Lamate, etc., they all had that shevet together with them. It wasn't just them. It was the neshamos of the Shvatim that were in Kvarim, that they were bringing into Eretz Yisrael. Remember, they were holding all the Shvatim, all of their bones. They were carrying them into Eretz Yisrael. Those neshamos came with them. The problem is, there was no representative of Shevet Levi. But there were two from Yosef, Ephraim and Menasseh. Here's Pshat. It says, Shevet Yosef l'Shevet Menasseh in these psukim. Menasseh is with Shevet Yosef. Yosef went with Menasseh as Gadi ben Susi. That was where Yosef went to. But then you have an open guy. Who's going to go with Ephraim, right, for Yoshua ben Nun? To that, Moshe Rabbeinu said, we all know that if a Rebbe teaches a child, teaches someone, then it becomes like his child. Moshe Rabbeinu was from Shevet Levi. He wanted to make sure that his Shevet Levi would go to Yoshua, who was his Talmud, and thus he would give Levi, the Shevet, to Yoshua, so that he would be careful and nothing would happen to him when he went in. That was the Yud, says the Be'er Basodeh. And if you look at the pasuk, it says, Vayikra Moshe Lehoshea bin Nun Yoshua. Vayikra Moshe Lehoshea bin Nun Yoshua. The Rashi Tevis are Ben Mi Levi. And that was the idea, that the representative for Shevet Levi was Yoshua bin Nun, and that was the Yud. That's what he gave him. Says the Be'er Basodeh, that's the pshat behind it. That Be'er Basodeh is a find. That's in Vayechi, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Later on, when they...
Yeah.
Would he then inherit the lady?
No, not literally. I mean, physically, no, you wouldn't get that. No, Yeshua did get an interesting chelik. He got the chelakim of all the 10 shvatim, of all the 10 spies. He got all of their chelakim. Timnath-Cheres, I believe it is. He's buried in Timnath-Cheres. I think that's the name of the place. But he got a huge area, Yeshua, even though he had no boys, which is an interesting call in and of itself, sort of like the Bnei Slach got all of his daughters, inherited the land, and gave it out to the other shvatim.
Yes.
Kalev got Hebron, outside of Hebron.
Oh,
right? He got the entire area of Maros Machpelah. Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, I believe this is the Beis Halevi, says the difference between Sarai and Sarah is that a hey stands for universality, to be out there for everybody, while Yud stands for introvertness, as in Sarah Shali. Sarai is my Sarah. Sarah is everyone's Sarah. The hey added to her and made her a more public figure. Now she was the Sarah of everyone. That's the idea of adding on the hey. Yoshua was an extrovert, and Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to make sure he wouldn't be with the Meraglim, so he made him into an introvert. He took the hey and turned it into a Yud in front to make him more introverted, stay away and not speak up. And that's what it means. He took the Yud from Sarai, which was introverted, and gave it to Yoshua to make him more introverted, to make him more to himself. That's an unbelievable idea. Targum Yonasim Nuzil says the famous line that everybody quotes and everybody says it. It says, Ukidi Chama Moshe Anbisanuse. When Moshe Rabbeinu saw the humility of Yoshua, when he saw that humility, that's when he changed his name. So what does that mean exactly? We're going to say a couple pshat, and there's others, but I'm not going to go through all of them. The Razid Ameir says this was what Moshe Rabbeinu was worried about. He had heard the nevuah of Elbed Medad, and they knew that Moshe is going to die, Yoshua is going to bring them in. Right? They all knew that. That nevuah was well known. He was afraid that Yoshua, as his Talmud, might convince the people to stay out so that his Rebbe would live longer. If they go in 30 days from now, Yoshua is going to lead them in, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to die. I don't want my Rebbe to die. So when he saw his anivus, his humility, that he wanted his Rebbe to live and that he wouldn't go in, that's when he said, okay, I've got to keep him away. I've got to make sure that he doesn't do that. And that's when he added on a yud and said, let me die. You're going to bring the people in. That's what's going to happen. Rav Schwab and the Be'er Basada say a simpler reason that really answers a kliyaka that we're going to say in a minute. Yeshua was such a humble person. He wouldn't think of fighting against all these great men. All these Meraglim. Why? I shouldn't do this. He's such an anav. So in order to tell him, no, fight them. Go up against them. Tell them that they're wrong. In order to do that, for his humility, Moshe Rabbeinu had to daven that he wouldn't give in to them at all. That was the idea behind it. The Kedush HaRim, the Chassam Sofer, the Shem Nishmol, and Rav Shur really explains all of them. Right? He goes into and he says it's exactly what the Meraglim had a problem with. All of these people had one issue. They didn't believe in themselves. They thought that they weren't good enough, that they weren't strong enough, and darn it, people really did like them. Right? It was like that. Did anybody get that?
Yeah.
It's okay. It's all time. Okay, anyway, regardless. They felt that their avoda was nothing. They felt that there was nothing. They didn't have enough schuyos to merit anything, to really merit the miracle that would rid the land of the giants and to take care of everything that was there and the strong men that were there. They were wrong. That's not humility. It's just lacking self-confidence. That's what it really was. The Meraglim's issue was their lack of self-confidence, of not realizing, not knowing how great they actually were. So the biggest unav of all of them, Yehoshua, needed extra yud to show him, you are great. You are great. You are special. You are somebody who's worthy. And that was what the yud was given over to him. He needed that midah, what's known as yud hey, the midah of ka. That's the midah of guiding greatness. You know why it's the midah of God? Wait, just very quickly. You know why it's the midah of greatness? Rav Shur says an unbelievable cheshbon. He says the following. He says, the Yerushalmi says that a bria, that means like a full animal, like a mouse, is batal. Okay, normally it's not batal. You say that a berry is not batal. If it goes inside something, it falls inside a chalent, you have to ask for the entire chalent. Right? But it is batal, says the Yerushalmi, if it's batal in 960 times its amount. Why 960? 960 lugin is the amount of lugin in a mikvah. Right? 40 sa'ah. Right? 960 lugin is the amount of lugin that there are in a mikvah. So if it's batal and 960, then it's all good. We all know the famous Gemara, right? You can have an eighth of gaiva. Listen to this, he says. Says Rav Shur. An eighth of 960 is 120. An eighth of 120 is 15, is the shame yud hey. So to show Yehoshua that he should have gaiva, he gave him a yud in the beginning of the name to make it Yehoshua, to make it a yud hey, to be able to give it to him. Isn't that a great Rav Shur? That's a great one. What were you going to say, Dave? You were going to say something.
There's a generation of slaves that came out of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they have a problem with self-esteem.
Yeah, but we're still Jews. You know us. I mean, I don't know if you know us. I know us.
No,
we could be slaves. We could be in a pit somewhere, and we'll still be like, I'm still the greatest.
I don't know.
I hear what you're saying. No, it's not a fault. It's that the Meraglim should have realized their own power, especially that they were chosen to represent Klal Yisrael.
Everything that's happened up until now has been miraculous. It really hasn't been their own power.
No, I definitely hear you. Nonetheless, these guys should have realized who they were. And that's part of understanding who you are. You're right. Obviously, humility is a tremendous trait, and it's something there. You still have to know who you are. One of the problems that Shaul HaMelech had when he first became king is that he didn't realize how great he actually was. He became king and was mevatel himself. And when people thought of him, he was okay with it. You can't do that when you're the king.
Like,
you're the king, you can't do that. No, Shaul HaMelech was old. We don't know how old he was, but he was probably older than Shmuel HaNavi when he became king, because he only lived for 2.5 years or a few years after that, right? So you'd assume. I'm sorry? That's true, but he was older. Shaul HaMelech was not a young guy when he died. He was older than most likely he was older than Shmuel HaNavi. Anyway, let's go on to the next line. There are the Paninim Yakarim over here. There are some really interesting things. I'll say one of them. This is a really crazy one over here. But Paninim Yakarim says, during the times, did you know this? In the times of Tzchias HaMeisim, you get called up and you go, you come back to life by the name, your Aleph Bey's name. So meaning, Abraham is going to come before Baruch. Baruch will come before Gedalia. Gedalia will come before David. It'll go by Aleph Bey's. Unless you're really humble. If you're really humble, then you come up at first no matter what. Maybe. Maybe that's possible. But for right now, I'm working on my humility. So therefore, if my humility is worked on, then eventually,
I'll try to think of like,
don't worry, I will tell you. We are also making the assumption that we're all getting up for Tzvias Mason. I know. Yeah, I'm going to have to think about this for a second. For right now, I still think I'm coming first. For right now. But nonetheless, either way, regardless, it's amazing. Okay? If that's true, then how could Moshe Rabbeinu change Yoshua's name from Hoshea to Yoshua? That means he's going to be brought up later in Tzvias Mason. He goes from a Hey to a Yud. The answer is because he saw that he was an Anav. Since he's an Anav, he's going to get up first anyway, and therefore he doesn't have to worry. Is that a grape shop in the Panini Yakarin? Therefore he doesn't have to worry about that. All right. The Kliyakar asks, and this is the famous Kasha. Everybody should ask it, right, if they don't ask it. Why did he only daven for Yoshua and he didn't daven for Kalev or any of the other Meraglim? What was the pshat that he didn't daven? Remember, Kalev was married to
Miriam.
But he was his brother-in-law. So why wouldn't Moshe have daven for his brother-in-law? So again, it could be that Kalev is more established. He's married, and not only married, but married to Miriam, his sister, even though he was only a few years older than Yoshua. Miriam was much older, right? Nonetheless, he was married to such a person.
Yeah.
You'd assume that Miriam, especially with the power of Lashon Hara that she had just spoken, had made an impression on Kalev. You'd assume that that's true, right? That's number one. Number two, it could be also that Gur Aryeh answers that Moshe felt closer to Yoshua's Talmud than any of the others, and if Yoshua went off, that would be a crazy Chilul Hashem, right? He had done everything else. If Yoshua went off, that would be terrible for everybody. That could be another answer.
Kalev was the leader of Yehuda, wasn't he?
He wasn't the Nasi. We already know the Nasi was from last week's Parsha, right? From Baal Oscha. So he wasn't the Nasi, but he was somebody who was very much in charge. He was a very higher up, let's call it. They were leaders. Rashi, Alfi Yisrael, but not the leaders. Not the leaders. And it's the thing we already mentioned before. He answered, right, exactly. He answers, the Kliyakar answers, and Meshach Chachma says the exact same idea, that Moshe knew that Amalek was living in the south. Who's the man that fought against Amalek in the war in Parshas B'Shalach? It was Yoshua. Yoshua fought the war against Amalek. He would always have that excuse to defeat them. As Hashem had said, Ki Yad Al Kes Yah. The hand of God, or the hand of Amalek, I'm sorry, is on the throne of God. Moshe wanted to remember that he always had the power to defeat Amalek unlike anyone else. So he added the Yud onto his name, Yoshua, to show him he would be fine. It's unnecessary by the others. With Yoshua, with the Yud, now everyone knows that he would have the power to be able to defeat Amalek. Don't worry about Amalek. We already said that answer above, right, from the Rav Schwab and the Be'er Basoda, right, Yoshua was such a humble person, he wouldn't want to stand up. That also answers that Yoshua was such a humble person, that's the reason why. But the Panach Raz and the Chuskuni from above would say differently. His name had been Yoshua for quite a while now. There was no reason to ask why Kalev's name wasn't changed. Right? The name Yoshua was changed years ago, as we said. It wasn't changed just now, according to the Panach Raz and the Chuskuni. So that's not a problem for us. Maskul David says, he wonders, how can you daven that somebody doesn't mess up? You can't daven that somebody doesn't sin. And he answers that for your own Talmud that you know about, Kimle Begave, you can daven that he should listen to his Rebbe. That you can daven for. You have a Kimle Begave. I'm sorry? But some are different than others. Some people I can tell, right, this person I know is going to be this way because I've been with him. I know where he's around. Another person is my Talmud. He's sitting in my shir and he's listening to me and learning Torah, but I don't know everything about him. Yeshua, he knew. And that made everything different. He said, I know about him. I can't daven for the others. I don't know what they're really like. I don't know if it'll be a Tzvilas Shav. That's how the Moscow David says it. Chavetz Chaim says this question. He adds on another question. He says, at the end of the Parsha, Kalev is praised. He said, Ikev, Kalev, Avi, Ruach, Acharis, Isabodi, yet another Ruach, Kalev is unbelievable. And Yeshua is just sort of like, there's Yeshua. It's just sort of like thrown at the end. What happened to Yeshua? Why was Yeshua's name changed and not Kalev? And then why was Kalev praised at the end and not Yeshua? So Chavetz Chaim says an unbelievable thing. He says, there are two ways to act when Rashaim seem to be taking over. Two ways to be able to act. You could fight and incite their anger by showing that you don't agree with them at all, right? And argue with them vociferously, right in front of their faces and jumping on them and saying, you're wrong, you could do that. Or you could even seem to agree with them until you can convince them that they're wrong. It's one of those things. Seem to agree with, I hear you. Let me explain to you why you're wrong. To be with them a little bit until you finally can tell somebody at the right time in the right place. Each side has a mila and a chisaron. Each side has a mila and a chisaron. If you outright argue with them, they may fight you and try to kill you. But at least you won't be affected by them if you're always fighting them. You're not going to be affected by them. By staying quiet, there's a good chance that you're going to be affected by them. Right? And that's a bad thing. But you'll stay alive. There's no question they're not going to try to kill you. It's like staying out in the cold a little bit too much. You know, you're going to catch a cold. You're going to freeze no matter what you do. Right? It's just going to happen. And that was the question, which derech is the proper derech? That was the difference between Yoshua and Kalev. Yoshua chose to fight with them. And all the time Yoshua was saying to them, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. And he needed rachamei shamayim that the meraglim wouldn't kill him. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu davened for Yoshua, because he knew what Yoshua was like. Yoshua was a warrior. Yoshua is a man of war who fights. He's going to go up and you guys are wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. And he was going to go up and do that. And Moshe Rabbeinu had to daven that it doesn't happen. Kalev is not that way. Kalev had to go to the Kibrei Avos to daven, not Yoshua. Because Yoshua was never worried about being convinced that the Meraglim were right. He was never going to. He was going to be fighting with them tooth and nail the whole time. But Kalev seems to be on their side. Everybody thought that Kalev was on their side. So Kalev was afraid he was going to be affected by their decisions. So he went to the Kibrei Avos and davened and said, please help me not mess up. Because I'm going to do this, just don't let me mess up. That's why later on, when he was going ahead, he found the right time and place to get up and say, you guys are wrong. He agreed with them, agreed with them. So when he wanted to silence them, he was able to silence them. That's the idea behind them. The Meraglim didn't even bother fighting Yeshua. They figured it's going to be an 11-on-1, what's the big deal? Kalev was able to stand up, and that's the pshat. Kalev did something which was amazing. Amazing. He pretended to be on their side, assumed, made them assume that he was there, and found the right time to show them they're all dead wrong, and didn't get affected by that decision. Should you make that decision to be like Kalev? You got to be very, very careful. If you know that in the end you'll be unaffected by the decision, then you can. But most people cannot make that guarantee. You try going over to the other side, right? The side of like Jews for jail. Just be like them for a little bit and we'll see what happens. Try to not get affected by them. Right? You say like, you know what, I'm going to act like them and I'm going to see. Try to not get affected. You will be affected by them. Kalev was unbelievable that he wasn't, because he begged and davened himself in the Kibrei Avos that he shouldn't be. That's somebody. So which derech should you choose? You choose Yoshua. But if you're going to choose Kalev, it still works. You just got to be very afraid of what's going to happen. And if you do it, Ruach HaKaris HaSapo. He's a different person. He's a tzaddik beyond a tzaddik. That's the idea behind it. And both of them are Emes Tikadrochen. There's another idea over here. I just want to point out, in Arochin Lamed Beis Mabeis, it points out that there's one place in Tanakh where Yoshua's name is known as Yeshua, and he loses the hay. Okay? He's been losing the hay over there. It's weird. Meaning, Yosha or Yoshua, whatever it is. It is weird. This is first Shlomo and a Chassam Sofer on that. I'm not going to go through that here because it's too much. Again, this is another thing I was going to add on in the end. I'm like, forget it. It's already 4 pages. I ended that. We're going to end off with one little thing. There was a case that became before the Levushei Srud. It's brought by the Pardes Yosef regarding a shul that had a little bit of extra space right by where the chazan was davening. So like a little bit of extra space there, right? So they decided, we're going to put in another chair and another stender there. We'll have another person sit there. We have an extra space. We'll put it right there, right by the chazan. Okay, so that's what they're going to do. The guy who used to sit right next to the chazan with that little space in between, he made a macha. He said, I used to be the first one next to the chazan. Now I'm the second next to the chazan. You have no right, to move my seat. He wanted to sit in that seat, but you have no right to move me from the end of the table. Right? You can't do that. I want to keep my seat, and that's that. The Gabayim said, we didn't move your seat. We kept your seat as it was. We just added on another seat to the end. So we didn't do that. We didn't switch it around. Right? You know, by the way, as a side note, that sort of happened to me here. They switched it around where somebody used to sit right next to Rabbi Tversky. Right? And then they put my shtender in, and they moved him over. So now he's not sitting next to Rabbi Tversky, he's sitting next to me. So I always thought like he could have a machal. I thought this before I saw this Levushei Srud. I always thought there could be a machal. We said, like, I wanted to sit next to Rabbi Tversky. Who gave you the right to move me away from Rabbi Tversky? Right? Obviously, the guy didn't have any problems. I'm just saying, right? The guy, in theory, could have had those, had that. Obviously, that's a possible machal. Excuse. Anyway, so what's the pshat? Levushei Srud got this court case. And you know what he said? He proved it from this week's Parsha. The Yud of Sarai was taken away from Sarai and put to the front of Yoshua. The hay of Yoshua has a taina. The hay shetaina, I was first. I was first. How can you move a yud there? I wanted to be first. Who gave you the right to move a yud there? Do you know what happens? The hay never moved its position. The yud was just put in front of it. Because the hay never moved its position, you just took another letter and put it in front of it. Since it wasn't moved, it's clear that wasn't a taina, and that's why the hay never tainted it, and therefore you have no taina over here as well. Your seat never moved, therefore they can add on another seat over there. I didn't say that I'm poskening halacha. I'm just telling you, it's a great chop from the Lucius Rudd. I definitely hear you though. I don't know what halacha you can hold that way. I know, right there. Like, put it right there.
I know what you're thinking.
No longer should you think that way. No, like that. But obviously, I'm not poskening this halacha. All right, guys, we're going to stop with that for right now.